All rise.
Welcome to the Cyber Law and Business Report. Get the top story on the hot-button internet legal topics of the day. This is your home for the latest on internet law and policy. Hear the latest net trends impacting business and have your questions answered right here. This is the Cyber Law and Business Report. Now, please welcome your host, the founder of the Internet Law Center, Bennett Kelly.
Good morning. This is Bennett Kelly broadcasting live from a very soggy Santa Monica today. We're here in the heart of Silicon Valley here at the offices of the Internet Law Center. Please check out our website, internetlawcenter.net. And for information on today's show, go to our blog at cyberlawradio.wordpress.com. And so today's show is Good and Evil in Tech. And we have a fair amount of both to discuss and also some news developments. But in the second segment, we're going to talk about good in tech, and particularly following Giving Tuesday. We're going to follow up that with a report on Causecast. It's a very interesting new company that helps that enables companies to organize and monitor their own social engagement. And we're going to have its CEO and founder, Ryan Scott, on to talk about that. And Ryan is a well-known social entrepreneur. But first, let's cover some news updates. And by the way, I said we're broadcasting live from Asagi, Santa Monica, LA, is now in its second day of a pretty heavy rainstorm, but it is much needed. We've been suffering from a severe drought, and a lot of people were very afraid of a very bad fire season, and we've been lucky so far. But the big news, one of the big Christmas movie releases is the Seth Rogen movie featuring his pal Franco, and called The Interview. And North Korea, which they play two kind of the TV show host and producer going to North Korea to interview the North Korean leader, and then they get recruited to kill them. And well, North Korea has expressed its displeasure all along about the production. And now they've been subject, Sony Pictures has been subject to a massive hack and data breach. And the scope of the data breach is quite extensive and includes a spreadsheet including the names, birth dates, and social security numbers of close to 4,000 employees, payroll breakdowns for the entire company, a spreadsheet detailing all the Sony Pictures employees terminated in 2014, including cause, employee performance reviews, salaries for top executives, as well as releasing some film content as well. And the interesting thing is the North Korean government has not denied responsibility. And so this clearly is looks like it's payback from North Korea over the film. And it is quite a massive data breach, and I mean, this could end up costing Sony millions in liability because of it. And you know, Sony had been subject to a series of data breaches just 2 years ago, so I think an argument can be made that they should have been prepared for such an attack, particularly knowing the North Koreans' objections to this film. So definitely something we're going to follow. We actually may reach out and have someone from the Hollywood Press come on and talk about this on a later show. So the movie opens December 25th on Christmas, and it looks like quite a fascinating movie. It looks like it's good for laughs, and but the question is I don't think Sony may be laughing by that point. Now, yesterday was Monday, I should say, was a big day in the Supreme Court, and in that there was an argument on whether or not a threat on Facebook is protected by the First Amendment, or whether a threat is a threat is a threat, and which is really appears to be my view. And basically, the defendant in that case insisted that he didn't mean to frighten his ex-wife, and that he was merely just blowing off steam. And in his kind of threatening post on Facebook, But it didn't seem like the Supreme Court was buying that argument. So Ruth Bader Ginsburg, you know, the justice who actually was just recently hospitalized for a heart procedure, asked the question, how does one prove what's in someone else's mind? And she said, a reasonable person would think the words would put someone in fear. And it's interesting, you know, when the Supreme Court deals with an issue like this, there's always the possibility that they might articulate a standard that creates a bright line that allows courts to better manage cases like these in the future. So in the 70s, there was a case brought against the New York Times over reporting of the civil rights movement in the South. And basically, it was suing the New York Times for libel. And the Supreme Court said that when you're covering matters of public interest, if something involves a public figure, a matter of public interest, we're going to create a very high standard that you have to show in order to win a defamation case, because otherwise there'd be such a risk of suits that it would have a chilling effect and actually would thwart the free expression of speech. So in balancing the two interests, the Supreme Court set a bright line rule that says in those cases, you have to show actual malice. And that was New York Times v. Sullivan, and I believe it was 1973. And so, you know, it has been, you know, a fair amount of time. You know, the question is always the possibility that in your ruling on this case, the court may take the opportunity to articulate an appropriate standard for, you know, addressing threats, or whether even just updating Sullivan for today's times. So it's worth watching. I do not believe that the appeal will be successful. But there's always a possibility that the court may use the opportunity to make a broader statement. And so, which leads us to, and actually today in history is the, I believe, let's see, do my math right, it's the 30th anniversary of the Bhopal disaster with Union Carbide in India, and quite a tragic event. So in California, we have the... we actually have someone sentenced. Ingues was sentenced to a year in jail for three counts, including one count of violating the revenge porn law. And the LA County City Attorney's Office said a conviction under law was their first, and a jury ruled that he would have to serve 36 months probation after attending domestic violence counseling. And so we actually have one conviction, and we had Carl Cronenberger on earlier this year to talk about his civil victory, one of the first verdicts on record for revenge porn in California as well. So, you know, it's starting to take root, and hopefully it will have the effect that we hope. So today's theme is good and evil in tech, and in the second half we will be talking about good, just as scheduling would work out. Turns out we're going to be starting off with bad. And right now, one of the bad boys in tech is Uber. And Uber has been getting tons of press, particularly following a report that came out that it was... going to target, it was going to spend up to $1 million to target journalists who were writing bad things about them. And basically said, here's a quote, that we're going to spend $1 million to hire four top opposition researchers and four journalists. The team could help Uber fight back against the press. They look into your personal lives, your family, and give the media a taste of its own medicine. You know, that's quite a thuggish statement to make. And it led to a huge fallout and reaction from Uber, which already had, you know, was reeling from a bunch of missteps. And let's kind of go over some of the things that the problems they've had over in the last year or so. Uber drivers have been arrested for kidnapping in Los Angeles and sexual assault in the District of Columbia in Florida. Uber is being sued for refusing to serve blind patrons. Uber drivers, while Uber claims that the drivers are very well paid and make close to $90,000, in reality, an investigation found they don't make anything close to that. And in fact, some of them barely make the minimum wage. Uber is alleged to have engineered a denial of service attack against its competitor Lyft, using 177 workers to book and then back out of 5,500 rides over a 10-year period. Lyft's investor, Peter Thiel, well-known in Silicon Valley, actually called Uber the most ethically challenged company in Silicon Valley. Uber also revealed that it was tracking what it perceived to be its rider's one-night stands, you know, based on the time the rider was dropped off and then subsequently picked up. And they were actually making calculations on what it called its rides of glory and calculating the areas having the highest concentration of them so they could have drivers there. They denied liability for the death of a pedestrian struck by a Uber driver or assault in which a Uber driver actually struck a passenger in the eye with a hammer, and that could potentially blind the victim. Uber, which has a God's view profile in which you can see where all of its cars are at any one point in the city, and more importantly, who's carrying it, actually displayed the God view profile to a launch party in Chicago when they launched in Chicago, and pointed out to the guests, notable people who were actually riding Uber at the time, including writer Steve Sims, who received a text from someone attending there saying, "Hey, I know you're right by Columbus Square, aren't you?" And he's like, "How do you know?" And which led to a big backlash on that. Uber got in trouble for using surge pricing to price gouge during events such as the recent hurricane that struck the East Coast. And Uber also had launched a campaign in France in which it hired, quote, hot chick drivers to drive around with its riders and hoping that, that would somehow encourage people to ride Uber. But after a backlash, it was dropped. And so the backlash started with, in response to that, With Pando Daily, Sarah Lacey, who's been one of the main critics of Uber, wrote a headline, quote, "The horrible trickle-down blank hole culture, why I've just deleted Uber from my phone." And Elizabeth Plank and Mick wrote that, "If you care about women, delete your Uber account." And she said, "It's hard to count all the ways Uber has degraded, diminished, and generally harmed women since its founding in 2009. When it's the CEO, whether it's the CEO openly referring to his company as Boober because of its effect on his sex life, or the company's chauvinistic ad campaigns, the alleged shut-shaming, the alleged slut-shaming of female passengers who accused drivers of assault, or the reports that drivers choked or even attempted to abduct female passengers, the company has built a reputation for increasingly problematic and misogynist management style and culture. And that's saying something in Silicon Valley." Travis Kalanick, another journalist said that Uber suffers from a paradoxical challenge. Its leadership is clearly smart and strategic as hell, yet at the same time, the company culture reeks of immaturity and lack of ethics. So Uber responded to this initial backlash by making the threat to spend $1 million, and that, and then after that, one of its officers actually tweeted a post that basically said, quoted the Taylor Swift song "Shake It Off," "Haters are gonna hate." And so clearly they were defiant and unshaken by some of these allegations, and were more or less going forward. And there's a story today that Uber has been sharing its God view data with prospective employees during job interviews, and so it has led to a major backlash against the company and media. In fact, the New York Times, Neil Irwin said that the company has renounced the Douglas campaign of targeting critics that its senior vice president described at a dinner party, but there are signs that Uber has taken aggressive stance toward the media outlets that cover it and that lacked internal protections against the misuse of customers' travel information. A writer for San Francisco Magazine said this week, the sources inside the company warned that her company might monitor her for rides. A BuzzFeed reporter said that she attended a meeting with an Uber executive in New York, and he was monitoring her arrival in one of the company's cars. And all these incidents have in common is they offer a portrait of a company without adults in charge. For the top executive ranks to individual operating units around the world, the mentality seems to be one in which sheer belief in the rightness of the cause overwhelms what an outsider believes at best questionable and at worst immoral practices. So Uber's under major attack, and they've actually brought in Harriet Pearson from Hogan Lovells, who actually has been on the show to discuss the privacy, discuss the data breach lawsuit being a challenge brought against FTC enforcement that was recently brought. And so she was on there, I think it was sometime last year. But she's been brought in to conduct an audit and on their data practice and kind of restore user trust. But Capitol Hill is already starting to look at it. So Uber has quickly become this tech bad boy. And just today in the news, it looks like they may soon have company. Zillow, the headline in Raw Story is that online firm Zillow ranked female employees by breast size and created an adult frat house culture. In the lawsuit, it's alleged that the company supervisors at their Irvine office cultivated an adult frat house culture, refusing to take action when she reported offensive behavior. And that privately, Zillow executives bragged that the office culture led to more sexual encounters than Match.com and referred to the internal office directory as Zinder, named after a dating application, Tinder. Less than 2 months after, she received texts that read something like, I have a great opportunity that just opened up on my face in the 92660 market, her manager said. Call me if you are interested. This is an executive position. It won't last long. Clearly with sexual innuendo. And then some people just abandoned the innuendo altogether. Call me. Matt is showering, thinking 333 dinner drinks and your smooth vagina. Another one said, want to blow me and have sex tonight. Really, really charming. Again, keep in mind these are allegations, but it does not paint a very positive picture of Zillow. And then we recently had the allegations that were brought up about the Gamergate and just the extreme misogyny and harassment that was directed at Nydia Sarkisian and some of the other female gamer players. And it's creating what I think it's highlighting, particularly the Uber story. There always was the statement that this seems to be particularly a bad environment, even for Silicon Valley, or extremely sexist environment, even for Silicon Valley, which raises the question, somehow is an acknowledgement that there seems to be a problem in Silicon Valley over sexism. And, given these facts, what are we doing about it? And is it something that we're going to tolerate? And that's a fair question to ask. I mean, obviously, we can deal with them one-offs in terms of Uber or whatever, but we're going to talk about that more when we come back after these messages. You're listening to Cyberlaw and Business Report only on webmasterradio.fm.
Stay tuned for more of the Cyberlaw and Business Report after this brief recess for our sponsors.
Introducing Rumble, the smart mobile management system, the first end-to-end mobile platform where you can make real-time app modifications from a point-and-click dashboard. Want to change the design of your app? Point-click, and it's live in real-time. Want to change the ad map of your app? Point-click, and it's live in real-time. Want to change the content mix of your app? Point-click, and it's live in real-time. Power your mobile business with Rumble. Are you ready to rumble? Visit www.rumble.me.
InternetMarketingINC.com is one of the fastest-growing full-service digital marketing agencies in the country, specializing in providing results-driven online marketing solutions. Internet Marketing Inc.'s passionate team prides themselves on staying ahead of marketing trends to create and implement campaigns that get more traffic to your website, gain positive brand awareness, and drive conversions. If you are looking for a data-driven approach to online marketing and advertising, call Internet Marketing Inc. today at 866-563-0620 or visit InternetMarketingINC.com.
Whether you are an online business or domain name investor, you need access to the best names. With over 270 million domains already registered, finding the right names at the best price requires a great wingman. NameJet.com puts you in the pilot seat by giving you fast and unparalleled access to some of the best premium and expired domain names on earth. As the number one domain name auction platform, NameJet.com is the best place to find domains for your business or investment. So light the afterburners to the domain name aftermarket and fly over to NameJet.com at Mach speed to get great domains today. NameJet.com.
The best gavel-to-gavel legal news and information on the net is right here. This is the Cyber Law and Business Report, only on WebmasterRadio.fm.
And we're back, and we're talking about good and bad in tech, and we'll be having a Ryan Scott in just a little bit. But there was an interesting article by the law firm Merchant in Time Magazine mid last month, in which she talked about the whole Uber controversy, but put it in context of the broader issues in tech. The headline was, "Dismantling Tech Success Culture Isn't Easy, but Deleting Uber Sure Is." And she said, We all should be concerned about what's going on with Uber, not just for what it says about tech, but what it means for businesses and culture as a whole. Some people have called the latest news just another clueless move by an inexperienced and young company executives, but that defies evidence of a pattern at play in tech, business, and society overall, that women are threatened and oppressed for having an opinion, perhaps more to the point that men and their inactions allow them the attitude to propagate. Boys will be boys. And so this is prevailing view, and she continues, this is not an isolated incident in tech. It's part of a pattern. Take, for example, Gamergate, a controversy that began earlier this fall of online harassment of women in video gaming culture. Social media attacks, particularly those from website forums 4chan and Reddit, were widely condemned for their sexism and misogyny. Just last month, media critic and feminist Anita Kharkazian became the subject of terrorist threats against her planned lecture at Utah State University, which made international headlines. And we actually had Mark Randazza on because of his Twitter tag, "I am Sarkeesian." And so this is something that I think tech needs to take a look at themselves. Technology has created in some ranks it is a disproportionate amount of men. Particularly on the technology side, and so that creates a different environment. But as we hire and expand the companies to beyond just the core developers, the company has to grow up, and I think you keep seeing this over and over again in the Uber coverage. Bringing in the grown-ups. It's time to end the boys' culture. And so that is something that I think we're going to have to monitor. Uber is a good lesson, and Zillow in particular, if those facts are true, are a good lesson that just because a company is doing well doesn't mean you have carte blanche to do extreme things. And I say this as a lawyer, but law is not exempt. There's a famous, which led to a several hundred million dollar judgment or settlement, I believe. But there was a partner at Baker McKenzie, which at the time was one of the largest firms in the world, who had particular liking for M&Ms. And I don't know if it was plain or peanut, to be honest, but he had a habit of dropping them in women's blouses and then retrieving them. I mean, this is a lawyer. I mean, come on. If you are that clueless, or which I don't think he is, I really think it's a certain arrogance and a belief that he can get away with it. And I think that's the culture that we have in some of these companies, it seems, whether it's Uber or Zillow. It's something that needs to be addressed. You know, there's a certain startups, you know, particularly when you still have the original founder, there's just this belief and this power that, you know, it's their company, they can do whatever they want. Well, guess again, you can't. The law does apply. You know, law protecting women from sexual harassment. It exists, even in your company, buddy. And I think that's the point that has to come through. You know, I think, you know, professionals need to rise up and say, hey, it's difficult to actually say to your manager, hey, I know you're on the cover of Time magazine or Fortune or whatever, but you know, you're being a real douchebag right now. You know, this we can't do this. Granted that is not an easy thing to do, but that's the challenge I think we're seeing right now in tech. And I think it's going to be interesting to see as these companies evolve, but it's also going to be interesting to see to what extent lawsuits come out that set the precedents. It's landmark cases. It's one big judgment that gets people's notice. You know, no one likes to lose money. Even, you know, business people like to make lots of money. They don't like to pay lawyers, and they especially don't like to pay plaintiffs. And so I think, you know, some litigation shaming, so to speak, could actually go a long way to maybe getting Silicon Valley's attention to address it, what clearly seems to be a problem. And so that is what we're facing at the moment. And we'll see how this progresses. Now, yesterday was, you know, over time, Thanksgiving traditions have evolved. And unfortunately, one of those traditions now seems to be of I'm shopping on Thursday, which, you know, frankly, I find distasteful. But we've had Black Friday, and there was this meme going around that Black Friday actually had some links to slavery. It did not. And speaking of memes, just as a side point, there's this meme going around on Facebook where people are posting some notice that pursuant to such and such code that they are telling you that Facebook cannot use their pictures or any of their content, yada, yada, yada. Well, actually, if, you know, just look at the terms of the statement. The code they reference does not even exist. There is no intellectual property code. Comment number one, get a clue. Comment number two, read the terms and conditions. You don't have that right. You gave Facebook that right when you joined. If you don't want Facebook doing it, don't do it. But the other thing is come on, if you're going to circulate some meme like that, at least check it out. So, you know, lately, I've been seeing more of these memes about how wrong that is than people actually posting it. But it goes in waves. And I myself, you know, I posted an article about the response, but just to make fun of the people, have a little fun, said that I was reserving all my rights under the 21st Amendment, which was the amendment repealing prohibition. So on that point. But anyway, getting back to the main point, which is we're talking about the evolution of Thanksgiving traditions. We had Black Friday, which then extended into Saturday. And then we had Cyber Monday. You know, we're encouraging people to do online shopping, and it's a major success for online retailers. And then yesterday has been this evolving thing of Cyber Tuesday. And that's Cyber Tuesday, but Giving Tuesday. And if we're going to, it just extends the whole holiday tradition one more day. And, Cyber Tuesday is really, Giving Tuesday, I don't want to keep saying Cyber Tuesday. Giving Tuesday is really an attempt to say, hey, you know, as we extend the holiday to spend all this money and engage in this commerce, you know, let's kind of remember what this season is about. And so what it's trying to do is just give a focus as the year end comes to a close. These are things that we must remember, and here's a day to just do something, whether it's get back to your community or whether it is to make a donation. And so we actually participated in Giving Tuesday, and we created a page on our blog because a lot of our guests come from nonprofits and the type of institutions that you might give to on Giving Tuesday. So we we actually highlighted those companies. We had links to how to donate, and we sent an email to some of our people on our list. And so I encourage you to visit our blog, cyberlawradio.wordpress.com, and we actually have a page there for just those messages and just for those companies. And so check it out. I mean, we have a lot of good companies there, and I really encourage you to look at it. And just a little bit of background about Giving Tuesday. It comes from basically the goal is it's a global day dedicated to giving back. And on Tuesdays, charities, families, business, community centers, and students around the world come together for one common goal, and that's to celebrate generosity and to give. So we're going to take a short break because we have Ryan Scott, and we're going to talk about his role in being a social entrepreneur and giving back after these messages.
Stay tuned for more of the Cyber Law and Business Report after this brief recess for our sponsors.
When you started your business, you first listened to your professors. Now that your business is growing and gaining ground, you only seek out professionals. PPC Professionals, an industry leader for highly optimized search marketing campaigns with over 30 years of combined management experience. Our professional approach to every campaign helps you find every avenue of revenue so that you can not only stay ahead of your competitors, but get a return on your investment and increase your bottom line. PPC Professionals, personal, professional, PPC services, ppcprofessionals.com.
Johnson, what's this mantis I keep hearing about? Do we need to call an exterminator?
No, sir. Moby Mantis is our new SMS marketing tool.
SM what?
SMS. Text messaging. Moby Mantis lets us communicate directly with our customers in real time. We can send promos, coupons. It even lets our customers market for us by sharing offers with their friends online. It's been great for business.
Sounds expensive.
Actually, I signed us up for an extended free trial. It hasn't cost us a dime.
Good work, Johnson. I guess the only thing we'll be exterminating is the competition.
To get your free extended trial of Moby Mantis, text radio to 21691. That's radio to 21691 for Moby Mantis.
Hey, this is Danny Sullivan to talk to you about Bruce Clay Incorporated. They've made Inc. Magazine's list of growing private businesses and have exhibited and sponsored at my conferences since the very beginning. You've seen their search engine relationship chart or you've read their SEO code of ethics, so you know they're SEO experts. But did you know they can help you with PPC, web analytics, web design, marketing strategy, promotion, and branding? Yep, get everything you need for success in the online marketplace. You can check it out from the professionals at Bruce Clay Incorporated. For over 10 years with offices worldwide, they've got the answers you need. Check them out today at BruceClay.com.
The best gavel-to-gavel legal news and information on the net is right here. This is the Cyber Law and Business Report, only on WebmasterRadio.fm.
And we're back, and we have social entrepreneur Ryan Scott, who's been around with a number of prior companies. He was co-founder of Net Creations, and he also worked with Arianna Huffington to create a special section of Huffington Post for impact and education sections. And so, Ryan, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So, Ryan, tell us a little bit how you launched that page with Arianna.
Oh, sure. I've known Arianna from just kind of being around the charity scene in Los Angeles. And at one of the events, we came up with the idea of powering activities on the platform related to social good, giving people a way to actually participate in the types of things that we were talking about. And then it became clear that we really needed a new section where we could actually just dedicate resources to talking about the causes that people cared about and the great things that people were doing in the world to make it a better place. And at the same time, power the actions on there to give people a way to actually, as they're at that moment that they're most inspired to give back, to not direct them necessarily to just the next article, but to give them a way to donate or volunteer.
We had a guest on last year who wrote a song and was raised money for the victims of the Boston bombing. And I did a post on Huffington about it, and it, he went from having 200,000 hits to 900,000 hits on YouTube. I mean, it's just amazing the impact it can have. So, and it helped raise substantial money, I believe. So let's talk about CauseCast, because we just finished talking about Giving Tuesday, and you were saying CauseCast actually participated in that. So why don't you tell us about the company and the role you guys played on Tuesday?
Absolutely. So CauseCast is an employee volunteerism and giving platform. It really gives you all the tools and really an internet website for a company to be able to have its employees engage in giving campaigns or a volunteerism campaign. And you know, the tricky thing about doing that normally is, and in the way it's done, you know, without software like CauseCast, is to keep track of things in spreadsheets, use email for scheduling, you know, basically do a lot of manual work. And what we've done is automated a lot of this, put it into a really, you know, beautiful, robust platform that employees can really use in a kind of a self-service way. You know, the company will come up with kind of the overarching campaign and say, you know, to the employees, well, and also identify, you know, throughout the company these community leads, you know, the do-gooders that you already know in your office, and empower them to add volunteer opportunities into a campaign and then for them to go out and ask their coworkers, you know, to participate in it. And it's interesting, with that model, as opposed to it coming top-down from, you know, corporate headquarters,
right,
it gets much higher levels of engagement, because the biggest reason that people volunteer or give is simply because somebody asks them. So coworkers asking is a really powerful way to do that. And then with Giving Tuesday, you know, the way our platform is structured, CauseCast, you know, our clients can create campaigns on their own, and they do. But then we also go out and find great opportunities for companies, you know, ideally that multiple companies can participate in at the same time. Giving Tuesday would be an example of that. So, you know, encouraged our, you know, created a campaign in our system and encouraged our clients to adopt the campaign and really make it their own. And we had several of our clients do that. And we've done that with campaigns, you know, with the White House and encouraging girls to stay interested in STEM education. We've had, you know, several clients pick up the reins on that and say, okay, great, here's the way that we're going to contribute. And it's always a way that benefits the cause, but it also, you know, benefits the company at the same time. An example of that would be our client, Chegg, an education company. You know, they decided to help encourage girls to stay interested in STEM education by doing job shadowing in their offices. And this was a great, you know, volunteer opportunity for the employees, but it also helps to create, you know, a kind of a, if you've got a mentoring program like this, it helps to create an applicant pipeline, you know, for the long-term, you know, recruiting benefit of your company. Because when those kids finally graduate, they're going to be thinking, you know, their only work experience at that point is going to have been the companies that they, you know, did job shadowing with. Those are going to be the first companies that they look to for potential work.
Or even if they don't, you know, their colleagues are going to be looking, and they're going to say, hey, you know, that I job shadow that. That's a really cool company. You should definitely think about them.
Exactly. So there's tremendous benefits for companies to do employee volunteerism and giving that extend far beyond just, you know, the day of service. We got our employees out doing kind of a team building exercise.
So, I mean, technically, so vis-a-vis the company, you know, the for-profit companies, you give them a platform to track and monitor and, I guess, promote what they do?
Exactly. It's a platform for the employees to set up volunteer opportunities, for the company to set up campaigns, and to really make the process incredibly easy. From signing up, you know, individuals can sign themselves up, and if they change their mind and want to sign up for something different, they do it themselves, as opposed to asking, you know, somebody in HR to help them out. And then, you know, tracking everything. And tracking's really evolved, and we've helped push this forward. We've taken it from a world where we're just tracking activity, like X number of hours,
right,
to one where we're tracking impact, which is something that people care about. That's something that people can grab onto.
Oh, that's the story.
We did.
Yeah.
Exactly. So what we've done is built a what we call a story capture mechanism. Because imagine if you've got 500 people out in the community volunteering over the course of several weeks.
Right.
You have a lot more than one story there. And it's not just the company and nonprofit story. You've got at least 500 stories. How do you start to capture them?
Right.
And so we built into the system a way for the employee, when they're out doing something in the community, at that moment that they're the most inspired and they're taking photos and videos, to upload them through their mobile back up into the system, where they're kept track of, you know, for the benefit of the company, you know, for the employees to see what's going on, kind of to keep the glow alive from the event. And then for the communications team to have a place to find all of this information for when they put together – you know, what it's, you know, their annual report or their sizzle reel for their, you know, the end of year, you know, kind of pep rally for the employees or whatever, what have you. But having that, having all that captured within the system was a really key part, I feel, to, you know, moving this industry forward. So it's not really kind of like billboard in the basement syndrome where you create, hey, everybody go volunteer and people go and they may do it, they may not do it. What businesses are seeing is that this is really a critical business application. This is something that the critical business function, and it really helps benefit the company in so many ways that they're starting to really formalize it and expect more out of these out of systems like ours.
Now, I also saw you have CauseCast for nonprofits. So what is your engagement
That's right.
on the nonprofit side?
That's interesting. So we work with nonprofits a couple different ways. So CauseCast for nonprofits is where organizations can come in and provide volunteer opportunities or, you know, giving opportunities to the corporate partners that we have. And, you know, quite typically, you know, the nonprofits can come and, you know, do that on their own without corporate relationships. But the biggest use case is for nonprofits who we've already, you know, are already paired up with one of our corporate partners. To be able to add opportunities that they know that the company is interested in because we've established some sort of a relationship between the two of them. We kind of act as a broker, and then CauseCast for Nonprofits exists as a place for the for a lot of it to happen without our manual intervention.
And so, I mean, it's what you're doing is daring, but your success is very heartening. You're basically taking a non-revenue item for a company but in somehow making it a revenue item for them because it's a way for a company to sell themselves. Hey, you know, come work for, you know, companyx.com because, listen, you know, not only is this a good place to work, but we're a big part of this community. We've done this in, you know, this area or this. Here, watch this video. And that's important
exactly
for
critical.
A company. And
it
and,
really is. And so,
and I was just saying, intuitively, though, it's not you, I imagine your hurdle in getting, you know, through the door is, you know, how do you make me money, and what do you respond to that?
It's interesting. There's a lot of studies around this area, and I'd say two things. One, at the point that we're at and where this industry is, there's so much demand for this type of capability that we're not having to make the case too much about the value. But there is a lot of supporting evidence around it, and it typically doesn't come up in the sales conversation, but more in the kind of the media that we push out there to help educate the marketplace. And so there's been a lot of studies around, you know, the value of this, you know, to the company. And, you know, just a kind of a few little stats, you know, one, a Deloitte did a study recently and said, you know, they found that 70% of employees strongly favor companies that are committed to the community. You know, 51% want volunteerism to benefit them professionally. You know, 57% of those who volunteer would recommend their company to a friend. So you see recruitment is a huge one.
Mm-hmm.
93% of employees who volunteer are happy with their employer. You know, so, you know, the people just, they're getting purpose from it. And then when you start to look at, okay, what is the cost to replace an employee? And
right.
And all of our employees are coming to us and saying, hey, we're volunteering and donating already. How can the company support us? The answer can't be we don't. The answer has to be we do, and here's what we do. Maybe we match donations. Maybe we've got a volunteerism program.
Well, you should mention that.
You know, maybe we'll give you half an AR.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've seen some people in this community, in the tech community, actually have, you know, where they'll spend one day a quarter where the whole company will volunteer someplace. You know, for example, Rubicon Project is an example.
It's really key. Yeah, absolutely. It's key for the company, and the employees just really expect it. It not only is just like a day out in the world, but really what the benefit is in all these things that I'm talking about, like recruitment and retention, all these things, all of it really comes down to kind of the big thing is employee engagement. And what companies have found is, and a lot of studies have shown that there's right now employees are more disengaged than ever. There's about 70% of employees overall are disengaged, and about 28% of those are actively hostile. So they're, you know, they're sabotaging projects.
Right.
And it's weird. You would think, why don't these folks quit? And the reason is that they've made it their mission to destroy the company, and so they'll hang around to try to cause trouble. So, you know, now you think, you know, what the heck does, you know, volunteerism and giving have to do with this? And really, it's the way where employee engagement come from, I believe, is actually it's not employees engaging necessarily with the corporation or engaging with, you know, online forums. It's with employees engaging with each other. So if you've got your best friend working at a job with you, you're having a happy time, you're staying there, you're not quitting.
Right.
You're gonna stay at that company for a while. And so, you know, having employees go out in the world and do something with some, you know, added purpose by using their time, you know, their dollars, but then the company is matching them, or them out there, you know, using their skills, you know, sometimes their job skills, sometimes the resources of the company, you know, adds more purpose to what they're doing, and gets them interacting with their coworkers in a way that's, you know, new and unusual for them as well. And I think that's where employee engagement comes from. I don't think employees are actually looking for balance. I don't think anybody's looking for balance, actually. I think they're looking for purpose. And I think that's what we help to provide.
And that's an interesting, you know, recast of a common question. I mean, I think you may be right. I mean, people do talk about balance, but very few people achieve it. Or even, you know, and part of the reason they don't achieve it is they don't actually set out to achieve it. But, the people who hire you, what is the number one thing they say to you about, listen, I'm glad we hired you because blank?
That's interesting. It becomes a lot of different things. The biggest thing is we're able to help take their program to the next level. In most cases, they have some sort of program already. And, you know, there's some clients that are just forming them. But with the ones that already have programs in place, we come in and allow them to run it at a much higher level with a lot less manual work. So an example of that would be Neiman Marcus came in. They had their one program that they ran their year-end, you know, fundraising program on a different platform. It came to us. We were able to run the entire campaign, and it was so much, you know, better orchestrated and streamlined that they did about 50% more during that first month than they had done, you know, the previous year. And that was great. And then they were able to say, well, that was so easy. Now we're going to start doing disaster response campaigns. And so there was also a mudslide. There was another disaster. And they were able to respond to them immediately and have something in front of the employees that they can participate in or not. But it showed a commitment to the company to, you know, being giving back. And, you know, lots of employees, everyone saw it, of course, and some employees participated. But then the company said, okay, this is great, but, you know, we've got 90 locations. We've always wanted to do volunteerism, but there was no way to organize this,
right?
You know, without hiring additional staff or really, it would just been too hard. And so they never did it. But then when we brought in CostCast, they were able to actually launch a volunteerism program. And it's very new from them. But like, so, you know, when I'm looking at this and thinking, the impact that this company is going to have has just increased tremendously just by really unlocking this, you know, this potential inside their employees and the company.
Go ahead. Well, I was just going to say there's another element to it. There's another element to it in that you get to, not only does it obviously increase the employee's sense of satisfaction, but it makes their company more respected in the community. And so when I say I work for Neiman Marcus or, you know, whoever else may have used you, they're going to say, yeah, you know, you guys, that's a cool company. I just read about what they did after this tornado. Or I read, you know, that makes it more rewarding for the employee to hear that.
It really does. No one wants to work for a corporate bad guy. And, you know, there's not that many companies that are, you know, truly evil. Companies are really a collection of people. And I think, and most people are good. And maybe that's Pollyannish, you know, sentiment. But I think once you go in and start on, yeah, I know. Once you go in and start kind of unlocking that, I think that, you know, that there's an interesting potential for, you know, for it to actually kind of change the fundamental nature of business. And I don't think capitalism is inherently bad. I think it's actually, it's the most powerful tool that we've ever created, I believe. And, you know, we're trying to harness that to, you know, make the world better. And I think by going in and having employees volunteer and give, they can end up changing some of the rules around business because, you know, ultimately they help define them.
You know, I'm a lawyer, obviously, and I'm actually a public defender's son. And I do share your belief. I do think people are generally good, but, you know, they go astray or they get tempted by other things.
You know what? They get perverse. There's perverse incentives out there.
Yes.
You know, just a purely profit incentive, you know, can be negative. But I think, businesses really do survive by making things, you know, products or services that people want. So they're providing a valuable service. doing that and not, you know, treating your employees well, or doing, you know, or not treating the environment well, or some of the things that were, you know, very, very short-sighted, we're finding out now that if you actually do treat the environment well, you do treat your employees well, you get to survive as a business.
Yes.
And then you actually will do better as a business. And so that's why, yeah, that's why I don't have to make the case often to companies about why they would do this. They're kind of scrambling all to do it as fast as possible. And I think, you know, we're starting to see, you know, about 90% of the Fortune 500 already had a giving program in place. So, you know, they move around to the best platform, you know, as it comes out. But what we're seeing, and one of the reasons we developed CauseCast in an extremely scalable way, is so not only can we scale up to these big companies, but we can scale down to handle small companies as well. Maybe working with, you know, like the Honest Company, for example, they've started with us at about 100 people. They're up to about 250 right now. A bunch of smaller companies have gone to, on board too, and you know, we've even scaled it all the way down to, you know, very small companies in partnership with a nonprofit organization called the Full Circle Fund here in San Francisco. It's bringing on small organizations, and we're running, we're kind of treating multiple companies as one community and allowing them to run on the CauseCast platform and still be able to give back even if they only have 5 employees.
Are you finding, and I think that's important, any sectors more responsive than others to your platform? Is it easy to pitch to tech people just because it's, you know, it's a tech product, or no?
You know, once a company gets above a certain size, they start to really, they have the extra person to be able to put resources behind this. And it is easier to talk to 10 companies a lot of times because they're willing to try something that's more cutting edge. They don't necessarily go for the established player all the time.
Right.
And, you know, as a newer company, you know, that definitely helps us. And, you know, we're doing things that are more, again, like with a, you know, having a mobile app and, you know, having social media or even having crowdfunding inside of the company, which is something that hasn't been tried before with any of, you know, our competitors. You know, it's for some established companies like, social media, I don't know about that. Whereas the tech companies are like, social media, of course.
Now you're based in San Francisco, but you have multiple offices like New York, Chicago, Dallas, DC, Washington.
Yeah, we have offices all over the place, but we're centered in Los Angeles, where I started it, there's more than half the company physically located there.
We're in Los Angeles.
And then I recently moved in Los Angeles. Well, we've been all over the place: Santa Monica, Culver City, and right now, a lot of the developers are in Burbank, actually.
Oh, beautiful downtown Burbank, as Johnny Carson used to say.
Yeah, absolutely.
But so if people want to learn more about CauseCast, because we only have a few minutes left, where should they go?
Sure. They should go to causecast.com, and that's our homepage. And then, you know, we do a lot of publishing all over the place, but our blog is a great source of information, very great industry information and how to run your program effectively and how to get started and a lot of things like that. And that's at causecast.com/blog.
Okay. And are you presenting anywhere soon that people may want to check you out?
I am presenting at IdeaGen in New York, but I think that's a private event, actually. I'm not sure where I'm going to be publicly next.
Okay, well, if you do have an appearance you want us to promote, let us know. But I want to thank you very much.
I appreciate that.
It was a pleasure meeting you a couple of weeks ago, and thank you for coming on the show. I think it's a great organization. I love the concept. So best of luck to you at causecast.com. And thanks again for joining us, Ryan. It's been a pleasure.
Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. And so we only have a few seconds left, but next week we have a special show. We're going to have one of our authors on, and as well as a client of mine, Obie Scott Wade, who is an amazing figure in entertainment. He has has a show out on cable called She's Out, and he has a book coming out, Audrey, and he's going to be talking about that. We also have Emily Parker talk about her book on the medicines under repressive regimes in China, Russia, and Cuba. So next week, great show. Don't miss it. Emily Parker and Obie Scott Wade here on Cyber Law Business Report. get court is adjourned. We will see you next week. Stay dry, California, and till then.
This has been a presentation of WebmasterRadio.fm, the world's largest business-to-business radio and podcast network. We welcome you to sample past episodes of this program, as well as our complete library of programs, on demand or on the air via our 24/7 live audio stream at www.webmasterradio.fm. The opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of WebmasterRadio.fm's management or sponsors. Any rebroadcast or redistribution without authorized consent of WebmasterRadio.fm is prohibited.